This is Ken Kennedy, and this is Kenzoid's Autonomous Zone, episode 50, recorded on Tuesday, August 20th, 2013. Things are going pretty well tonight. My major issue right now is that Charlotte and I putzed around watching YouTube videos of Kenny Rogers. What was it? Sunday night for too long. And it's one of those things that I'm not a huge Kenny Rogers fan, but I was when I was a kid. It's one of those things. And now that I've watched a bunch of Kenny Rogers things, I've had Lady, Coward of the County, I have freaking all these Kenny Rogers songs stuck in my head for the past 2 days. It's like hell. I was trying to sleep last night and I was like dreaming stuff that had to do with not Carth. Don't laugh. It's not funny. She's not nearly so cute when she laughs at me. Out loud enough to be heard on my podcast. Yes, she's going to be able to be on the podcast eventually, but today is not supposed to be her day, especially when all she's doing is giggling at me. I've had Kenny Rogers stuck in my head for 2 days, which sucks. I'm going to have to like listen to some Skinny Puppy or something to like burn this crap out of my head. Well, bygones. So that's been good. Probably the thing I was going to talk about tonight, as I talked about last night, about Patrick Rothfuss's Name of the Wind, which as of the time that I had the did this podcast last night, I was 43% complete of the way. Ebooks are so incredibly precise. So I was 43% complete. I thought it was interesting, and I have to admit I got caught up in the book and finished it. I read it for a while last night, fairly pretty late, read it really early this morning. And definitely use it for my, I usually take 5 or 10 minutes at a time out of an hour when I'm working to read. And I've been reading it this morning. I finished it and I believe I'm about 20% through the second book. So Name of the Wind is the first book. And today I'm at this point, I'm about 20% of the way through the second book, The Wise Man's Fear. And I have to admit the book grabbed me a little bit. It was not bad. It's interesting. I would say it's a solid and interesting book. I like it. I don't get the weird, I have to tell people about this vibe about it that I have. Probably the last two books, I thought about it for a while when I was running today. The last three books. Third book, like longest ago, was Cory Doctorow's Little Brother. I had and just an absolute urge to like shove that book into people's hands when I read it. Beyond that, the other two books that I can think of recently would have been the first couple books in the Temeraire series by Naomi Novik. I still like the Temeraire series past the book, first couple books. I was not as insanely enthusiastic. I don't really know why. Actually, the third book, not so good. The fourth book, pretty good. And actually, after that, I kind of frittered away for, I don't even think I've read the fifth book. And I think there might be a sixth book at this point, and I've like just wandered away from it. But the first two books, the first book in particular, is just fantastic. I love that book. His Majesty's Dragon. Excellent, excellent. You know, kind of weird alternate history fantasy. We got dragons and they talk and they're cool and they have personality, and it's an excellent book. that, you know, that book I like pushed into people's hands. And then the other series would be the Small Change series by Joe Walton, the first book of which is Halfpenny, which is kind of an alternate history set in a world where England made peace with Nazi Germany in, I think, 41, something like that, in the middle of World War One. So they like kind of no longer were messing with them. And it's just a strong. It starts, Halfpenny starts out as kind of like an English countryside procedural police thing, and it gets bigger than that. And it's, if you haven't read that Small Change series, it is awesome. Halfpenny in particular is probably the best of the three, but they are all awesome books. I throw them into people's hands. So the weird thing is, Name of the Wind hasn't quite hit me in that way, but on the other hand, once I got going in it, I had, you know, read 50 pages here or 5% or whatever it was on an ebook. That's the tough thing about ebooks. My brain is used to thinking about books in pages, and now I'm thinking about it in percentages. But, you know, I was reading 30 pages here, 50 pages here, 60 pages here. Once I got into the story and started listening to it, you know, I read a big hunk of it one day, and then the next, and then that got me to about 43%. And then last night, you know, I finished the book and got today 20% into the next book. And it's solid. It's solid. It's, we'll have to see. I'm going to have to think about where I put it in your 100, you know, favorite science fiction of all time. But it's a solid story. I actually really enjoy it. If you haven't read it, the characters are, particularly the major characters, are not caricatures. They're complicated enough to be interesting. They're not crazily overbuilt or anything, but there are a number of characters. It's, you know, it's got a lot of people, you know, a lot of major and minor characters going on. I mean, there's one major character, but there are supporting characters that have some depth to them, which is always interesting. One of the most fascinating things about it is its meta story, because the story itself, and I've seen other stories do this, but it's done a pretty good job here. It's a story about a story, in a sense. So it's the overarching story is the protagonist, who is at the end of his time. I haven't gotten all the way through it, but he's at presumably the end of his time, and he's telling his life story as a story to a story chronicler, to somebody who's writing down the story explicitly in the book. And in fact, occasionally, so we start at the beginning of his life, but every so often we bounce back into the quoted present time, and things happen there. It's not, you're just, he's an innkeeper now. He's kind of semi-retired. He's like one of the greatest warrior magic users, whatever, of his age, but he's semi-retired at this point, and we jump back into his retirement age at certain points in the story, and minor things happen there, but we're mainly going through this earlier story. So the story is at two levels, in a sense, which is already a little bit interesting, and it's done fairly well. And then it gets a little more interesting when he acknowledges the fact that he's telling a story about a story. So we get an acknowledgement in the story that there's a meta story going on, which is cool. And then he even goes to the point where he starts to talk about the fact that, you know, good stories that are interesting to the common folk, whatever, like stories that are made to be good rather than made to be true. They have discussions about this at certain points in time. Is this going to be a good story where we're going to cut out all the boring stuff, or is this going to be a story that's true, even though we might have boring and or bad things about this person that we consider to be a hero. So there's like an explicit discussion about the meta story of the underlying story during the overarching parts of the story, which I like that. It's not super, super crazy complicated, but it's a couple levels complicated. And I like anything that has that sort of complication to it. And then there's a weird, potentially not just for me, but for people like me, thing that's a big catch on me. This guy goes to, so he's like, basically a gypsy. He's like, they call him Rue in this world. But he starts out a gypsy, and he's with the gypsy family, and bad things happen, and he kind of orphaned. But he's trying to get to this place called the university, which is like the big magic using, this is where you learn all the cool stuff and the magic and everything in the world. And he gets there, and he starts to learn stuff there. And he learns magic and all this crazy stuff, right? You know, kind of fantasy-ish. We've all heard this stuff before. But the university's done really well in terms of the kind of machinations that go on between students and between students and professors and just the sort of like little inane things that go on in a university situation, period. Which I really like. But then in particular for me, there is what's called the archives, which is the library. And the way the library is done is fascinating to me because I am a library geek. I'm a whole bunch of other geeks. You know, I'm a board game geek and a you know, comic, you know, lots of geeks, but I'm also a library geek. I went to Duke and spent all 4 years while I was at Duke working in the library, the books, doing, you know, reshelving things and all that sort of stuff. And I get the gist that Patrick Rothfuss has some library geekness to him because he spends some time talking about library geek stuff, everything from, there's a fascinating thing in there where, and I can totally see this happening in a world where there's this one huge library. Let's say, like in our world, it'd be the Library of Alexandria. Let's say, and it was there for hundreds of years, where you could see where over time, different masters of the library would, and this is what happens in this world, decide that things should be cataloged in a different way. And so they change cataloging over time. And in fact, at one point in about 50 years before what's going on in the book, there were multiple masters of the library over a very short 5 or 10 year period. And so we end up with actually groups of librarians who are in allegiance to different methods of organizing things in the library. And they get into actual conflict within the library over this. And when I listen to this, I can totally believe it. The Duke Library, for example, was, I don't even know if it still is, but I'm assuming it is. At the time that I worked in the Duke Library, it's organized under the Library of Congress method of organization. Whereas most people are, you know, if you go to your J. Random Library in wherever, you know, North Carolina, it's organized under the Dewey Decimal System. These are completely different. Library of Congress is letters and numbers. It's not just numbers like Dewey Decimal. They are completely different. I've totally understand the difference between like conflicting library organization things and how these things could cause problems and stuff. And the notion that there could be like a war within the library, I can totally understand. And then there's another point within the library, and this totally sounds to me like someone who has worked in a library, a large library in particular, like I have. I spent, when I was an undergraduate at Duke, one of the things in particular, like freshmen and sophomores are supposed to do is called walk the shelves. And what walking the shelves means is you literally walk through the shelves and you look at the books
and you determine that there are books that are out of order. And you spend an hour or 2 hours or however long you're capable of doing it at a time doing this. And again, it's not Dewey Decimal. This is like Library of Congress at Duke. But imagine it was Dewey Decimal. You know, that's a little easier. And Library of Congress is not that much different. It's letters. So it's alphabetically letters, and then there are numbers below it. It's the same concept. But what you're literally looking for is what they talk about in this story, where if you're a student and you find a book that is interesting and are valuable to you, and you grab it and you read it and you don't finish it, and this is what students do, because even I did it. You find a place in the library. You're like, I'm not done with the book, but I'm going to find a place in the library and I'm going to reshelve it myself. And I know where it is, but it's out of order. And what that means and what they talk about in the book is that book is gone. That book is gone from the organization of the library. It's disappeared, you know, because there are 10,000 shelves, 30,000 shelves, 40,000 shelves, whatever. And you've taken it from the shelf where it's in order and you've placed it on a random shelf that you know where it is and you are the person that can find it. And no one else can find it. And there are several people in this story that talk about that are librarians. They're shelvers, and they talk about how angry that makes them. And I was fascinated. That resonated with me because I spent so much time in the library myself. So that was the whole library portion. It's not huge. There's a portion because he. Library is a big deal for a while, then it's not a big deal, then it's a big deal again. You know, it's not, but just it resonated with me because I have library blood in me, I guess. So, but that helped get me through. So, like I said, I went from half the book yesterday to finishing the book last night and this morning, and I'm 20% through the second book at this point. So it's not terrible. Like I said, it's not one of those books I want to push in people's hands, but I definitely like it. It is a solid, it's fantasy. It's your typical medieval type. Magic is semi-rare. People who do magic are it's not like there's magicians on every street corner or anything like that. They're called arcanists. I like it. It has a world that's overarching. It feels like there's a story. There's a world that's bigger than the story, which I always find to be useful, or always find to be pleasing. I guess I don't like books where it feels like the entire story of the world is shoved inside the book, where there's nothing beyond the book. If you're enough of a world builder that you can build a book that's bigger than your story, I always like that. So, and Patrick Rothfuss has definitely done that in this point. So, really like it so far. So, I'm looking forward to continuing on with it, and we'll see how it goes. So, that'll be it for this evening. This is Kenzoid's Autonomous Zone. It's at kenzoid.com, and that's where the show notes will be for tonight. You can reach me at kkennedy@kenzoid.com. You can also reach me on Twitter at Kenzoid, and on Google Plus at the long 37 digit thing that you'll see in the show notes for this episode. This episode is Creative Commons License Attribution Sharealike version 3.0, and is part of the Dog Days of Podcasting Challenge, which you can find at dogdaysofpodcasting.com, which also has a link in the show notes. So there we go. And great talking to you guys tonight. And we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks a lot.